Welcome to today's Pacific Basin 2024 Annual Results Announcements Conference Call. I am pleased to present Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Martin Fruergaard. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Mr. Fruergaard, you may begin.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for attending Pacific Basin's 2024 Annual Result Earnings Call. My name is Martin Fruergaard, CEO of Pacific Basin. Assuming that you have already gone through the presentation, we will briefly highlight some of the key points discussed in it before we proceed with the Q&A session. In 2024, we generated an EBITDA of $333 million. An underlying profit of $114 million and a net profit of $132 million. This resulted in a 7% return on equity and an earning per share of 19.9 Hong Kong cents. We have a strong balance sheet with net cash about $20 million and available committed liquidity of $548 million. Our core business generated $178 million before overheads, benefited from the stronger freight market, while our operating activity contributed $70 million, having generated a margin of $630 per day over 27,610 days. In view of our sound cash generation, the board recommends a final dividend of 5.1 Hong Kong cents per share. Combined with the interim dividend distributed, this amounts to $61 million, which represents 50% of our net profit for the full year, excluding vessels disposal gains, consistent with our distribution policy. The board has also approved another share buyback program of up to $40 million in 2025, as our shares continue to trade substantially below the current market value of our assets. Please turn to slide 4. In 2024, we completed the announced $40 million share buyback program, buying back and canceling a total of 138 million shares, which reduced our issued share capital by 2% after our convertible bond conversion in June 2024, resulting in the issue of 30 million shares. This, combined with the recommended final dividend, means we are committed to distributing about $101 million dollars or 83% of our 2024 net profit, excluding business disposal gains. Since 2021, we have generated approximately $1.75 billion in profits and are distributing around $1.17 billion or 67% of total net profits, excluding business disposal gains. We believe that buying back our own shares at a significant discount to NAV is a strategy that enhances shareholder value more efficiently than acquiring secondhand vessels at current prices. Please turn to slide 5. In 2024, average market spot freight rates for Handysize and Supermax increased 24% and 21% year on year to $11,120 and $12,920 net per day, respectively. Firmer dry bulk demand growth, especially Chinese demand for coal, iron ore, and bauxite, supported the freight market in 2024, while disruptions in the Panama Canal and the Red Sea ironed out seasonality and drove ton-mile demand. However, the market weakened in the fourth quarter as transits through the Panama Canal normalized along with weaker than expected grain exports. Current forward freight agreements, or FFAs, indicate steady improvements in the remainder of the first quarter of 2025, despite hovering below the overall level in 2024. As freight rates corrected in the fourth quarter in 2024, we anticipated a weaker start to 2025 and actively took cover for the first quarter at rates higher than the current spot market rates. Dry bulk market activity has picked up since the early Lunar New Year holiday at the end of January. Please turn to slide 6. Global dry bulk loading volumes grew approximately 2% year-on-year, driven by robust Chinese demand. Minor bulk loadings increased 3% in 2024 due to increased loading of bauxite, agri bulk, steel, and forest products. Bauxite continued to drive minor bulk loading, mainly from Guinea and mainly carried by large bulk carriers. China's weak property market dampened the demand for construction material, including cement and steel. Excess steel produced was exported, leading to a 26% year-on-year increase in Chinese steel export. Grain loadings increased by 4% year-on-year due to increased loadings from Argentina and the U.S., which had recovered from drought in 2023, while Ukraine grain loadings increased 84% year-on-year with the success of its own corridor despite ongoing conflicts. Brazil's strong soybean export at the start of the year was eroded by delay in corn exports and limited grains transport due to drought in the fourth quarter of 2024. Coal loadings decreased 1% year-on-year as demand declined in Europe, in European countries, and some East Asian countries under the renewable energy transition agenda. Chinese coal demand remained robust in 2024 due to lower domestic production and hydroelectric output in the first half of 2024. And finally, iron ore loadings increased 4% year-on-year, driven by increased production from key exporters, Australia and Brazil, along with strong Chinese demand due to its steady steel production, which benefited from improved steel margins, giving favorable iron ore prices and robust steel demand, especially from Southeast Asia. Please turn to slide 7. In 2024, our core business achieved average Handysize and Supramax daily TC earnings of $12,840 and $13,630, which represents a 5% increase and a 1% decrease compared to 2023, respectively. In the fourth quarter of 2024, we reversed freight tax provisions from prior periods, which positively impacted our Handysize and Supramax TCE earnings by $1,280 and $1,920 per day, respectively. This resulted in a full-year increase in our Handysize and Supramax TCE earnings by $320 per day and $470 per day, respectively. We do not anticipate any further prior period freight tax adjustments affecting our future TCE calculations. For first quarter 2025, we have covered 92% and 100% of our committed vessel days for our Handysize and Supramax core fleet at 10,770 and 12,680 per day, respectively. These rates are higher than the current market spot rates, as well as the FFA rates, which are about 8,230 for Handysize and 8,480 for Supermax in the first quarter. We have more open days left this year, having covered 40% and 56% of our committed days compared to the same time last year. Please turn to slide 8. In 2024, our Handysize and our Supermax vessels outperformed the indices by $1,720 and $710 per day, respectively. If we exclude the positive impact from the reversal of freight tax provision, the outperformance would have been $1,400 and $240 per day, respectively. Handysize outperformance continued to improve over the year, driven by well-timed cargo coverage and our ability to optimize through triangulated trading. On the other hand, our Supermax outperformance was limited by a high cargo cover, as we anticipated the usual seasonal decline in the freight market, which unseasonally only materialized in the fourth quarter of 2024. In the fourth quarter of 2024, our Supermax fleet outperformed the index by 3,620 per day, or 1,700 per day, when excluding the impact from reversal of freight tax provisions. In 2024, our operating activity generating a margin of $630 per day, operating activity margin was impacted by unforeseen weather-related disruptions and congestions in the fourth quarter of 2024, especially related to Chinese steel export. Our operating activity days increased 18% year-on-year to 27,610 days in 2024. We will continue to expand our operating business, allowing us to capitalize on market volatility. Please turn to slide nine. Our Handysize daily core vessel costs have increased marginally. Although OpEx decreased with normalized crew costs, higher depreciation costs from dry docking and fuel efficiency investments, along with a slight increase in long-term charter vessel costs due to delivery of long-term charter newbuilding vessels, increased the blended core vessel costs by 2% to $8,750 per day. We continue to remain cost competitive with our indicative owned fleet cash break-even level, further reducing to $4,710 per day before G&A, representing a 4% decrease year-on-year. Please turn to slide 10. Supramax-owned vessel depreciation costs also increased due to higher dry docking costs and investments in fuel efficiency technologies, including silicone paint. After the redelivery of higher-cost long-term charter-in vessels, our long-term charter vessels days decreased and daily costs reduced 10% year-on-year to $16,310. As a result, our blended Supramax costs, daily core vessel costs also dropped 5% to $9,650. Our indicative owned fleet cash break-even level increased slightly by 1% year-on-year to $5,130 per day before G&A. Please turn to slide 12. Revenue and TCE earnings increased due to high activity level and higher freight rates, but higher charter costs of vessels required to fulfill cargo commitments, especially on a Supramax, resulted in a slightly lower EBITDA in 2024. Our G&A has increased slightly, predominantly due to increased staff costs related mainly to our digitalization and optimization efforts. Our net profit was $132 million, further improved by gains on vessel disposal of five older Handysize vessels. Please turn to slide 13. We continue to maintain a robust financial position with $548 million of available committed liquidity, which includes $282 million of cash and deposits. Our operating cash inflow from the period was $259 million, inclusive of all long and short-term charter hire payments, compared to $286 million in 2023. We realized $44 million from the sale of five older Handysize vessels, which has an average age of 20 years. Our CapEx amounted to $128 million, which included $46 million for dry docking, about $40 million initial payment for four newbuilding dual-fuel Ultramax low-emission vessels, and about $43 million for two vessels delivered into our fleet in 2024. We paid a total of $66 million in dividends, which included 2023 final basic and special dividends of 5.7 per share and the 2024 interim dividend of 4.1 per share we paid in August 2024. We spent $40 million to buy back shares under the 2024 share buyback program, and our net cash outflow from borrowing was $36 million in 2024. Please turn to slide 14. Our balance sheet remains strong. We returned to a net cash position of $20 million in 2024 from a net borrowing of $39 million in 2023. Our owned vessels' total net book value was about $1.7 billion, while their market value was estimated to be higher at $2 billion, according to composite broker valuation. As per 31 December 2024, we had 59 vessels that remained unmortgaged. Our goal is to optimize our capital allocation and ensure a robust, safe, and flexible capital structure, which will enable us to make strategic and countercyclical investments, pursue growth initiatives, and deliver value to our shareholders going forward. Please turn to slide 16. Minor ton-miles are expected to grow 2.3% in 2025, supported by broad-based trade demand and global economy. This is estimated to grow by 3.3% according to latest IMF forecasts. An increased trade volumes for minor bulk, such as cement and clinker, ores and concentrates, fertilizer and steel. However, the demand for iron ore is expected to moderate due to reduced Chinese domestic housing construction and rising steel trade protectionism. Similar coal demand is anticipated to decline, giving ample stocks in China, increased domestic production in India, and transition to renewable energy in Europe, European countries, and some East Asian countries. On the other hand, climate change is expected to continue affecting domestic crop output. This may lead to increasing grain import volumes, improvements in crush margins, and hog prices in China may also support grain demand. Please turn to slide 17. The minor bulk fleet is forecasted to grow by 4.4% due to more deliveries in 2025 from orders placed during the strong market in 2021 and 2022, while scrapping is forecasted to remain muted at about 0.5% of the fleet. The combined order book is currently at about 10.9% of the total fleet, which is considered manageable compared to historical figures. Additionally, the scrapping pool continues to increase, with approximately 14 and 11% of Handysize and Supermax capacity being over 20 years old. Going forward, we believe emission regulations will likely further reduce effective dry bulk supply to slower speeds, accelerate the scrapping, and increase downtime for retrofitting energy-saving technology. Therefore, we are confident in our sector's long-term prospects despite the short-term supply increase. Please turn to slide 18. Transit through Panama Canal normalized after an increase in rainfall since the rainy season began in May 2024. As for the Suez Canal, the Houthis have suspended attacks on the non-Israeli shipping in the Red Sea under the Gaza ceasefire agreement. However, transit had yet to recover as shipping company maintained caution and insurance costs remained high. Small proportion of dry bulk fleets transit the Suez Canal compared to other shipping segments, particularly container ships. Shipbrokers estimate a 1 to 3% drop in dry bulk ton mile if Suez Canal transits fully recover. Please turn to slide 19. Global commodity demand is expected to remain steady in 2025, despite easing demand for iron ore and coal. Additional support may come from anticipated further economic stimulus measures from China to meet growth targets, with a focus on expanding domestic demand and supporting consumption. Further disruptions arising from geopolitical tensions, trade tariffs, and extreme weather conditions could potentially increase ton-mile demand. The current dry bulk fleet order book is around 10.4%, and net fleet growth in 2025 is estimated to remain steady at 3% year-on-year. Rising protectionism could negatively impact the global economy and trade, while tariffs and widening deficit in the US could drive domestic inflation, impacting interest rate costs. The complete unwinding of Red Sea disruption would result in decreased ton-mile demand, although the impact is relatively limited in our sector. Additionally, the anticipated weak Handysize and Supermax vessel delivery in 2025, with an estimated net fleet growth of 4.4%, is expected to outpace the 2.3% growth in minor bulk ton mile demand, but scrapping is forecast to remain limited under the IMO until the IMO formalizes its next decarbonization regulations. We remain cautiously optimistic about the year ahead and are prepared to seize any opportunities arising from increased volatility in 2025. Please turn to slide 21. We maintain our disciplined approach to the growth and renewal of our fleet by acquiring modern secondhand vessels countercyclical, by selling our older and less efficient vessels to unlock values. With LNG orders and long-term charters of new building vessels that comes with purchase options, we aim to maximize our growth optionality with the ambition to reduce emissions and transition to net zero by 2050. 2024, we exercised the purchase option on 158,000 deadweight ton Supramax vessel built in 2016, and we sold five older Handysize vessels with an average age of 20 years for a net proceed of about $44 million. Since 2021, we have been increasing our carrying capacity and fleet efficiency by selling 25 older vessels with a total capacity of 0.8 million deadweight tons, including 23 Handysize vessels, one Supramax and one Ultramax vessel, and we have acquired 20 second-hand vessels with a total capacity of 1.1 million deadweight tons, including six Handysize vessels and 14 Supramax and Ultramax vessels. As vessel values softened in recent months following the decline in freight rates, we will continue to assess strategic and countercyclical investment opportunities when they arise in the market. Please turn to slide 22. In November 2024, we contracted four 64,000 deadweight dual-fuel methanol Ultramax newbuildings, LEVs, from our Japanese partners for consideration of $46.5 million each, with expected delivery in 2028 and 2029. Given the current order book and age profile of minor bulk fleet, as well as the tightening regulations and limited shipyard capacity, we believe we are making the right move at the right time. The deal is based on various considerations and expected benefits. These include added financial values from FuelEU, emission pooling, and selling over compliance credits, which can accelerate payback, as well as saving from using renewable fuel compared to the cost of carbon tax and penalties associated with conventional fuels, which are expected to rise with more emission regulations from, among others, the IMO. The move aligns with our long-term initiative to transition to net zero emission by 2050. Please turn to slide 23. Our long-term charter new building vessels provide us with the opportunities to grow and improve efficiency without initial cash outlay. In 2024, three 40,000 deadweight ton Handysize new buildings and one 64,000 deadweight ton Ultramax new building were delivered into our fleet. After redelivering some long-term charter vessels, we had 70 vessels at the end of 2024 that had extension and purchase options. In 2025, we retained purchase options on four Handysize vessels and one Ultramax vessel, and we will evaluate whether to exercise these options. By maximizing optionality, we can better navigate market volatility and remain agile and competitive in different stages of the shipping cycle. Please turn to slide 24. We are well prepared to navigate the short-term uncertainties anticipated in 2025 as we plan for long-term growth. Our market position remains strong, and we continue to be fully customer and cargo full. We aim to grow our position as both an owner and operator in the minor bulk segment. By maintaining a long open position, we can leverage market cycles as we optimize our short-term position to capture market volatility. In view of the market developments, we are committed to further improving our cost and striving for sector-leading cost base. We are enhancing our performance management approach and continue to invest in performance, digitalization, and data use to continuously improve our productivity and profit margins. We aim to grow the company by implementing a disciplined and countercyclical strategy for our fleet growth and renewal. This involves acquiring modern second-hand vessels by selling older and less efficient vessels. We maintain a prudent approach and continuously evaluate vessel price development to maximize value creation through timely investment and divestments in our fleet. For capital allocation, we aim to maintain a robust and flexible capital structure with high liquidity, enabling countercyclical investments. We have limited committed CapEx, mainly relating to our usual dry dockings and investment in fleet optimization, excluding any vessel purchase income. We remain positive about the long-term fundamentals and prospects for dry bulk shipping. Finally, following a search that presented us with a number of excellent candidates, we today announced that Jimmy Ng will join us 12th of May 2025 as our new Chief Financial Officer. Please see our announcement dated today for a summary of his professional experience with U.S. and European investment banks and since 2008 with Hutchison Port Holdings. I look forward to welcoming Jimmy to the team shortly, and I'm confident that he will be a valuable addition to our leadership team and contribute well to the continued growth and success of Pacific Basin. Here, I would like to conclude our 2024 annual result presentation by thanking our colleagues at sea and ashore for their contribution to our result. I will now hand over the call to the operator for Q&A.
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question for today's speaker, please join the Zoom link via the blue Ask a Question button. Press the raised hand button, and you will enter a queue. After you are announced, please unmute yourself, state your name, company, and ask your question. If you find that your question has already been answered before it's your turn to speak, please press the lower hand button to leave the queue. You may also type your questions in the Q&A box.
One online question coming from the Q&A. Regarding USTR proposals, how are the U.S. potential actions and charges on the Chinese vessels going to impact TD?
Yeah, now the regulation is, of course, we've seen it, and we have evaluated consequences for us. I have to remember that the majority of our ships are actually Japanese-built. We have 75% Japanese-built ships and 25% Chinese-built ships. And when you look at how much we call the U.S., I think it's about 7% of our own ports are in the U.S. So if the rules are being implemented as they look at the moment, then of course it will have an impact, especially if we call the U.S. But I think when we look at it, what will happen is this will really disrupt our market. And it's again one of those disruptors that overall we believe will be supportive for our market because suddenly ton-mile will be longer, and people will, of course, have to position the right ships and do the right things when calling the U.S. So it will have an impact on our trading pattern. We will have to adjust that part. And of course, we'll have to see how the final rules end up before we sort of decide exactly what to do on that part. But it's one of those examples that it will have an impact on the market because this is a disruptor, one again, that will create volatility and also longer ton-mile.
Our next question comes from Cathy Huang on the webinar. Please unmute your line and ask your question, Cathy.
Hi, Martin. This is Cathy from HSBC. So we would like to check your outlook on the dividend. And this is the first question. And the second question is that Trump announced 10% more tariff on Chinese imports overnight. So can you assess the impact on Pacific Basin's operation?
Yeah. So as we announced earlier here, the board has recommended a total 50% dividend for 2024. And on top of that, a $40 million share buyback program that we will execute this year, similar to what we did last year. And in respect to the tariffs coming in, I think what we read, because there's a lot of things on the tariff side at the moment coming from the U.S. The U.S. is not a huge importer of dry cargo. They're probably more an exporter. They're not in a global scale, not small, but they're not that big. The thing we probably sit and look at is how are others going to retaliate to the U.S. tariffs? So mainly probably China. What's China going to do in return for these increased taxes? implemented by the US. And we don't know that yet. And of course, we are following that part of it. In general, we would say, again, these trade tariffs, again, it will create these disruptors that actually sort of creates longer ton mile. It will make sort of not very optimized supply chains because you have many different things. So in that sense, it's quite positive for us. The thing we always fear a little bit when we start talking about these things, it will have an impact on the global economy, because we are actually also driven by the global economy fundamentally. But all these disruptors, of course, adds on top of global growth. So short term, definitely an advantage if we have such issues. But in the longer run, we fear it might also impact the global growth.
There are currently no questions on the webinar, but I would like to remind people that if you have a question for today's speaker, please join the Zoom link via the blue Ask a Question button and press the raised hand button, and you will enter a queue. You can also type your questions in the Q&A box. Thank you. Okay, our next question comes from Sandeep Varma. Sandeep, please unmute your line and ask your question. Thank you.
Thanks. Congratulations, Martin, on decent set of numbers. I wanted to understand what percentage of your owned fleet is Chinese built. And yeah. I have a follow up after that.
What's the second question?
No. So I wanted to understand, in case if it is less than 25%, then would you be using this opportunity to buy some of the Chinese? I mean, would you be using this opportunity to kind of contract some of the Chinese shipyards for some of the ships? Because these may be available at a bargain price. I'm talking about a scenario if these proposals by USTR goes through. Thank you.
So the first question. So we it's about 25% of our fleet is built in China, and the remaining 75 is Japanese built vessels. And we also looked at how many calls we actually have in the US. Last year, and that was 7%. I think it's about 600 port calls actually. We have a lot of calls actually in that part, but percentage wise, it's actually only 7%. I think on what opportunities it will bring in the asset space, and that remains to be seen. Our new buildings, they are from Japan, from MRI, and we have no new buildings in China. And of course, if these rules are being implemented in how the program is today, there's also some opportunities for us, because we are mainly Japanese ships. So there might be some opportunities on that side of it. I think we are always following all opportunities to buy vessels in the market. And we actually like the volatility in the market, also the asset prices, because it does give us some opportunities to do, we call it counter-cyclical investments, or at least investments where good timing. So of course we follow this very carefully, but we have so far not seen that the Chinese built ships are very discounted. I do actually think maybe there's maybe not so much trading going on, what's much sale going on with Chinese ships at the moment. So people are probably holding back and waiting to see how the rules and regulations are. But I agree with you, it might give some opportunities one way or another.
Understood, very, very helpful. I'm just thinking of a possibility. And for example, if your company has 20% of its fleet with a Chinese build, then probably you'd like to take it to 25%. To take the advantage of probably cheaper ships available at Chinese yards than it would be otherwise. And one clarification I'm looking for, when you say that 25% of your fleet is Chinese built. You are talking about your operating fleet or owned ships? Thank you.
That's our owned, the ships that we own, which is the 12 ships plus. And then we also have four new buildings, but out of the 112 ships, 25% of them are built in China. In that part, I think there's a lot of things. You know, it's still a little bit early, but we of course have seen. I'm sure the Japanese yards and maybe the Koreans have seen more activity or more inquiries in respect to new buildings, from different others, not necessarily dry cargo, but for all segments. For some who might want to get a little bit more balance in their fleet. I think if you look at the total fleet, how many ships are built in China, it's a lot. And I think there's, in the dry cargo space, there's very, very few owners who will not have a much higher percentage of Chinese built ships in their fleet than we do. I think actually we have a very limited number of Chinese built ships in our fleet. And we have historically and still are, also because we normally keep the ships alive, have had sort of preference for the Japanese ships, also often actually also trade better on the speed and consumption. So we have always had a preference for the Japanese built ships.
Understood. If I can ask one more follow up, which is what is the ratio of Chinese built ships in your operating fleet? Because if this regulation goes through, that will be applicable for the operating fleet, not just for the owned ships. And if you have higher proportion of Chinese built ship, higher than 25% of your operating fleet is Chinese built, then you may be looking for, kind of exiting some of the charters or chartering more Japanese built ships to kind of benefit the from this regulation.
On our chartered fleet, we have 17 long-term chartered ships, and they are all Japanese built ships.
Okay.
You talk about 100, I think it's 148 short-term chartered ships we have on at the moment. I actually don't have right now that number, but all these ships are very short period, right? They are all one voyage, maybe 5 to 7 months. So they are all very short commitments in that part. Mm-hmm. So our big commitment is the 17 long-term new buildings charters that we have from Japan, plus our own 112 ships that we trade at the moment, plus our four new buildings from Japan. And I'm sure you're right that if these rules are implemented, then of course you will or see it, maybe not call it two-tier market, but you definitely see that things will change and people will look for different kinds of ships to do it. But I think it's also important to remember that the majority of the dry cargo trade on our ships is outside the US. So the US is not unimportant, but for the container or for the dry cargo space, our trade is much more outside the US than to US. But I'm sure you will see it. Ships that is not Chinese built and owned in different structures will start calling more on the US. And what's going to happen in the container space and other spaces, that's going to be interesting to see. But this will have quite a disruption in the market if these rules are being accepted and implemented.
Understood. Thank you so much. One clarification for this proposed rules. So your company will be falling under Chinese shipping company. I mean, will it qualify as a Chinese shipping company or non-Chinese shipping company? Because your incorporation is not in China.
No, we are Hong Kong listed. So I guess that depends a little bit on how others see Hong Kong in these rules, and we don't know. We'll have to see how that.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Sally.
For our next question, we'll be heading back to Kathy Wang. Kathy, please could you unmute your line and ask your next question? Thank you.
Hi, Martin. I have another question. So we noticed that the cover ratio and rates in this year, in the first quarter of 2025, are lower versus the same last year. So is it in anticipation of freight rates to improve? How does this position Pacific Basin if there are more headwinds to demand? And as you mentioned, there will be oversupply.
Yeah, I didn't say there would be oversupply. I was just saying there's at least according to Clarkson's and others, there's more ship being delivered than what they expected the value to be. But so we have to see how the disruptors actually impact that market going forward. I think when you look at our cover, you said first quarter, actually our cover for first quarter, we are basically 100% covered of supers and ultras. And I'm glad we are because the market actually took some of the normal seasonal dip in January. So I think we are very well positioned for first quarter. But it's true that if you look for the full year, our cover this year is lower than we had at the same time last year. And I think we've been talking also at previous calls. The challenges we had last year, we simply had too much cover, especially on the supers, that actually hit us in the sense that it was very tough for us to sort of optimize, do the triangle trading and do the things we normally do so well because we had too much cover on that side. So this year we have reduced that a little bit. And the reason we've done that is also to make sure we have the space and the room to operate and position our ships in the right positions and maximize the earnings and the margins on our business. We have to see how the market is moving. We normally thrive quite well when we have the volatility in the market. We have the seasonality and these things. That's actually where we often perform the best. So we have to see how this year is going. I have to say that when we ended last year, I think we were also a bit worried about the market. But again, multiple disruptors last year changed the market totally. Not to the bad, it was actually quite good. And we also outperformed the market, but we didn't get the margins we wanted on the supers. And this year we tried to position our little bit different to make sure that we can gain on the ops that we'll see in the market going forward. So I'm quite happy with the cover we have. I think it gives us a little bit of flexibility that is needed in these markets.
Yes, thank you. That's very clear.
Okay, so there are currently no raised hands on the webinar, but I would like to remind you that if you would like to ask a question, then please use the Zoom link via the blue Ask a Question button, and then please use the raised hand button and you will enter a queue. I'll just give it a moment to see if we get any final hands. Okay, there are no further questions. And as there are no further questions, we will begin our closing remarks. So please go ahead, Mr. Martin Fruergaard. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you again for joining us today and for your continued support of Pacific Basin. If you have any further questions, please contact Cameron Hill from our Investor Relations Department. Goodbye and goodbye. Thanks.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect.